The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. This and other great health talk shows at RadioMD.com. Here are Joe Galewski and Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
We're glad you're here. The radio show that helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. It's the You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. He's the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. I'm Joe Galewski. Reach Dr. Mike on the phone at 877-711-5211 or udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. Thanks to all the radio stations who listen to this broadcast, this show weekly. We thank you. We also would invite you to join us on iHeartRadio Talk. You can get your favorite shows and personalities and hear what's going on in health news today. So you do that by adding Radio MD or and You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show to the Daily Pulse on iHeartRadio Talk. That's a special news and update station you can customize. It's free. iHeartRadio.com on the web. Download the app or use it on the web. Click Talk in the main menu and search for You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Hello, Dr. Mike.
How are you, Joe?
I was playing golf today. My golf partner on the second hole experienced lower back spasms, left, went to urgent care, and I got home 2 hours before he did.
Well, you know, the interesting thing was with low back pain.
Well, I'm not thinking about the low back
pain. Let me go here. With low back pain, the successful treatment for episodes of low back pain, seeing a Labrador, does as well as seeing a experienced, competent spine surgeon.
Well, but it's Saturday.
A Labrador.
Do you know what a Labrador is?
Well,
you can go home to your animal and pet him and get as much relief. You shouldn't take narcotics. You shouldn't get any x-rays for the first 8 weeks. The natural course is to heal, and that's the best way of doing it.
Should I have called you? Should I have called you when he got hurt today?
Joe, you can always call me, you know that. Or email us at udocs@gmail.com. But in fact, and so the key is not doing things that harm you in those first 8 weeks while your body naturally gets better.
But my question is, 7 hours in urgent care.
Yeah, that's 7 hours.
Well, what happened, obviously, is he got some x-rays, right? And what also happened is he got some other stuff that he shouldn't have gotten. What he should have gotten is a referral to physical therapy where they taught him exercises to do to help him get a stronger core and to recover from this.
Well, that's long-term, and that's what should be done long-term.
That's what you do right away, and then you put an app on your iPhone so with those things so that every 4 hours from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. it reminds you what to do. You save a ton of money, you educate yourself, and you avoid a ton of harm.
What's the average time spent in urgent care? Do you know?
I don't know. We can probably Google it.
7 hours? 7 hours.
I think 7 hours is pretty long.
That is a long time, from 9 till 4.
Wow.
9 a.m. till 4 o'clock, and he got out of urgent. You know, I think they should rename urgent care. That's not the right description of that place. Urgent care?
No, obviously it didn't work.
No, well, but I know other people have been to urgent care and have spent too much. What is it? Is it just work overload? Is it lack of staff, generally speaking? I can't speak for any specific
institution. No, it's they're getting things they don't need and shouldn't get. He's going to get, or his insurance company will get, a ton of a bill that probably involves some spine films, probably involves a CT or an MRI of the spine.
And some drugs.
He shouldn't have gotten any of those.
And drugs.
He probably got some opiates. He shouldn't have gotten any of those. What you should do when you get your first episode of low back pain is grab the dog and sit down with the dog and then learn and then book an appointment to physical therapy in 3-4 days.
Who should go to urgent care then?
Well, obviously infections should, fevers should. I mean, there are whole bunches of things that should. But one of the things, the most common thing that people see doctors for, low back pain, you shouldn't see a doctor for in the first 8 weeks of low back pain. Because it is so unlikely to be something that a surgeon should intervene for and can do a benefit by intervening. herniated discs, the majority of everything in low back pain gets better with nature's healing, with time.
Obviously, you can't golf, right? Because golf is the worst thing you can do.
Oh, golf is a horrible sport.
Yeah, he loves
people
the game.
People don't understand how much twisting you do.
He loves the game.
In 8 weeks, he'll be able to play again.
In 8 weeks, it'll be snowing.
That's that'll be good. He'll have a long winter of recuperation. And during that winter, he should do exercises like lunges and squats and, if you will, push-ups.
You're right.
Or, just planks, things that strengthen his lower back and his core muscles.
Yeah.
That's what he should do.
Yeah.
And bent over back rows. He should do those religiously so that the next year he can beat the heck out of you.
Yeah, well, he plays well, and he's disappointed when he can't play, but 7 hours. What's your take on chiropractors?
We have a couple in the Institute, so we like the fact that they do better.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, they shouldn't see, even in the first 8 weeks, you don't need to see anyone but a physical therapist or, if you will, a chiropractor to teach you exercises that you should do.
Okay.
That's the main thing you should do.
Yeah, obviously, everything's preventative.
Pet the dog.
Be much better.
Hopefully your friend's listening now, Joe.
Well, I'll get on the phone with him. But he already blew a day at urgent care for 7 hours.
Someone blew a ton of money probably on some. You ask him if he got MRI and X-rays that he shouldn't have had.
I will.
Now, if this is not his first episode.
He's had back pain. He's got a history.
And if he has not recovered spontaneously from it in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's had a history, then he should have already known this. That the first episodes, you don't do this.
And he is overweight.
That doesn't help.
No, obviously not. No, that's not a good thing. He's not done the right things to keep him out of urgent care when it does happen.
But I hope you had a very high bet with him that you get to collect on if he's injured.
That was interesting because I got home and he was still at urgent care for 2.5 hours after I got home. We walked 18 holes. What's history is history. We have a guest at 35 after the hour that thinks we're losing the war on cancer. Is that right?
He thinks we aren't winning it as well as we should or are losing it. Well, in fact, the title is Why We're Losing the War on Cancer and How to Win It, Clifton Leaf, The Truth in Small Doses. Clifton Leaf is a famous, if you will, guest editor for the New York Times op-ed and Sunday Reviews. Previously, he was executive editor at both Wall Street Journal's Smart Money and Fortune. A winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Distinguished Business and Financial Journalism, 2-time finalist for the National Magazine Award. This is a detailed summary, if you will, about cancer and what the rates are, why it is different for cancer than heart disease, and how to win it.
And he is a personal cancer survivor.
All right, so that's a good thing, too, knowing you're speaking from experience. You have an idea about a Real Age tip for this hour, sir?
We do, and it will depend on how fast we go. So I'm going to find out how much time we spend before I tell you what the tip is.
That's good. Okay, that'll be coming up before the end of the hour. And again, on the phone for Dr. Mike, it's 877-711-5211, and our email address is udocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com. I did talk to someone this week who did give us a try on iHeartRadio Talk, and it was wonderful. iHeartRadio is a way to specifically tailor your music interests, but now iHeartRadio Talk is a way to specifically tailor your information. And we're proud to be part of it, iHeartRadio Talk. So if you've tried it, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you haven't yet, give it a shout. Here are some of the stories we'll be talking about, our medical stories of the week. How many lives could be saved from heart disease every year? The number may be surprising to you. Dr. Mike has the answer to that. And also consuming twice the recommended daily allowance of protein does some good things. So you may want to listen into that. What exactly is metabolically healthy obesity? That's one of the stories we'll talk about this week. And a multitasking video game makes old brains act younger, which is great, too. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Is your skin aging before your eyes? There is something you can do to reverse those signs of aging. I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry, and my solution doesn't involve a knife or a needle. It's a serum I created called Nighttime. Nighttime makes your skin smoother, brighter, and thicker with just one step each day. I've packed Nighttime with vitamin C and A, moisturizers, fruit acids, skin brighteners, and antioxidants. That's a lot of science in one bottle. But that's what it takes to make your skin look younger and more attractive. Until Labor Day, when you purchase two bottles of Nighttime, you'll get a third bottle free with free shipping. Call 855-940-1800. That's 855-940-1800, or on the web, it's drperrys.com. That's drperrys.com. Put the word Radio MD in the discount box to receive three bottles of Nighttime for the price of two.
You still rely on sugar or caffeine for energy? B12 is known as the energy vitamin. It nourishes your body, supporting mental function and vitality. Problem is, B12 is hard to absorb. Did you know a recent study showed almost 4 out of 10 people had B12 levels in the low normal to deficiency range? This applied to both young and old, even those with adequate meat intake. So it isn't just vegans or older folks who need to be concerned. Until now, the alternative was getting a shot at the doctor's office. What if we had a B12 offer that was simple? Liposomes deliver B12 painlessly. No doctor visit. Why not discover what B12 can offer you? Drink the new liposomal form. Right now, you can get a bottle for 50% off at B12offer.com. This limited time B12 offer is unique and it's easy. Just go to B12offer.com for 50% off. That's B12offer.com.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize a message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours, all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Kids often test parental limits and rules, and sometimes parents decide enough is enough. That's when a timeout may be effective. Timeouts stop children from getting attention after they misbehave. Timeouts work best for children between the ages of 2 and 5, but can be effective for kids as old as 10 in some cases. A rule of thumb is 1 minute of timeout for every year of your child's age. For example, a 4-year-old would get a 4-minute timeout. Some guidelines for a timeout. Give the timeout immediately after the unacceptable behavior so your child knows why she's being disciplined. Explain clearly why the behavior was unacceptable. Calmly place your child in a quiet, boring, but secure place. If she gets up, quietly explain that her timeout isn't over and return her to her seat. When it is over, wipe the slate clean and remember to praise your child each time and every time she shows acceptable behaviors. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Brought to you weekly by YouBeauty.com. And morning and night multivitamins, udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com, with Dr. Mike Roizen on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. How many lives could be saved from heart disease every year?
Well, Joe, the number the CDC put out was 200,000, mainly by controlling blood pressure, but also decreasing smoking, increasing physical activity, and improving diet and decreasing cholesterol. Obviously, obesity was the toughest one to control, but blood pressure and controlling cholesterol were easier and actually had huge numbers of people if just everyone would control their blood pressure.
Now, there are about 100, there'll be obesity rates are on the rise by 2022, 113 million.
We'll hardly be able to find a seat on a bus, Joe.
And those seats will have to be made wider.
And more sturdy, that's right.
Yeah. Is it possible to be medication-free?
What do you mean by that?
Well, blood pressure, cholesterol. I mean, you know, there are people who do take those pills. I mean, you know.
Oh, we have a lot of patients other than preventive medicine, meaning mm-hmm. not treatment.
Yep.
But so they take a multivitamin, half a multivitamin a day, et cetera, aspirin, DHA, omega-3, omega-7, a probiotic. You know, they'll take some, if you will, supplements, vitamin D, probiotic, I think I said that.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't take any medications for any known problem. They take them preventively.
No, majority, a large percentage of people probably take some form of medication.
Right. Well, a third of people have high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
A third of people have type 2 diabetes. A third of people have, or pre-diabetes. A third of people have high cholesterol values. So if you just add those three together, you're going to get a large swath of America.
Yeah. And it's really increasing. How long has it been increasing to these numbers if we're going to see 113 million by 2022? When did the explosion start?
Well, if you look at it in 1990, there was no state with more than 20% obesity. If you look at it now, there is no state with less than 25% obesity. In fact, I think if you go back to 1990, I may have misquoted it. There's no state with more than 15% obesity in 1986. So it was really from 1990 till 2010, we gained a pound per year per person.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 30-year period, 25-year period, we got per year. So the 65-year-olds in 2010 were 25 pounds heavier than the 65-year-olds in 1985.
So what triggered it then?
And the data are associated data, not what you would call definitive data. So if you look at it, it was when fast food became readily available every time, every place, and it was a culture change. It was okay to eat at times other than meal time or the specific snack time.
Yeah, and people became more sedentary.
Well, in fact, from 1990 to 2006, people's physical activity has gone up 1% per year. Unfortunately, calorie consumption has gone up 2% per year.
And there's less home cooking, too, right? Less people cooking at home.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. But what about, like, people's day-to-day calorie expenditure outside of physical activity? That's what I'm talking about.
A lot of that change was in the 70s through the 90s. It wasn't really this last 20-year period of obesity. So the period of obesity, at least people got physically more active, it looks like. That's the good news. The bad news is we've increased calories about, if you will, 10 calories per year in physical activity. We've increased food consumption calories, 40 calories or so a year, compounded annually.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at the CDC obesity
40
trends.
Calories per day per person per year. Go ahead.
just because you continually will see more and more colors being added to the map. It's like if you go back to the 80s, there's only three colors on the map.
What map? What do you mean by that?
If you go to cdc.gov,
yeah.
Go ahead, tell them, Bridge.
They have the behavioral risk factors surveillance system, which looks at obesity rates in every single by state.
Mm-hmm.
And so they color coordinate it by the percentage of obesity in each state. So if you go to the United States map in 1990, there's three colors on the map. There's white, that means no data. There's light blue, which means less than 10% of adults are obese in that state. And then there's a different color, blue, which indicates 10 to 14% of adults are obese in that state. So that those are the only three colors on the map in 1990. Then by 1991, they add a darker blue that indicates 15 to 19%. And then when you get to 1997, a yellow is added to indicate over 20%. And then orange is added, and then red is added for over 30% of adults in each state being obese. And then you slowly see all of the blue colors fading away. So we have no blue colors currently on the United States map from 2010 because there's no state that has adults with 10 to 19% of their population obese, because it's so much larger than that.
Well, that's really, really impressive in terms of being startling.
Really startling.
By that. You had gut bacteria, Dr. Mike. Gut bacteria is too low in a quarter of the population?
Well, what this study was is they looked at the DNA typing of gut bacteria, if you will. And what they found was that in 25% of people, they had less diverse gut bacteria and less variety of gut bacteria. And those happened to be people who were more likely to be obese. Now, whether the obesity caused the change in gut bacteria or whether the gut bacteria changed the obesity isn't clear.
Gut bacteria is caused by
What we eat, and what we eat changes our gut bacteria. And apparently, if you eat certain things, your gut bacteria stays relatively constant and with less variety. So all of this is new. It's called the microbiome. You're going to hear that phrase a lot. It's related, and in fact, there's a treatment for it. You can do fecal transplants. It'll be in pill form, so it's not doesn't sound as fucky.
Thank you.
But in fact, it is something that we started using for, if you will, Clostridium difficile infections. It is now becoming the treatment of choice and a first-line treatment for Clostridium difficile. But it may be that your microbiome or the variety of bacteria in your gut, because of the way they metabolize food and what they do and put out and the amino acids and other substances they put out, may change your gut so that you eat more, or eat less, etc.
Before we go to the break, and the guest, our guest at 35 after the hour is Clifton Leaf, Truth in Small Doses, Losing the War on Cancer. He'll be our guest in 6 minutes. The flu vaccine, Mike, is that available yet? Will that be available soon, or is it available now?
It's starting to be available now, but usually it's the second or third week in September where people roll out things. You've heard Walgreens and Rite Aid and CVS have all been advertising it. So it's now available in certain places, but the corporations and the hospitals will roll it out probably over the next 2 weeks.
All right. Guest time coming up, udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Thanks for listening, and stay well.
My My story may help you. This is what happened. I was talking to my best friend. I told her I wasn't feeling like myself. I had pain in my pelvic area and bleeding that wasn't normal for me. Since it had gone on for a couple of weeks, my friend said I had to go to the doctor. Of course, she was right. Turned out I had uterine cancer, a type of gynecologic cancer. To make a long story short, by realizing something might be wrong and seeing my doctor right away, I received treatment. Now, we're confident I'll be fine. Please, please listen to your body. If something doesn't feel right for 2 weeks or longer, see your doctor.
Uterine, cervical, ovarian, vaginal, and vulvar cancers are all gynecologic cancers. Signs and symptoms are not the same for everybody, so get the facts. Get the inside knowledge. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO to learn more.
Knowing can make all the difference in the world. It did for me.
A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. It's the time of year when colds and viruses begin making their rounds through schools and families. Sometimes parents will ask for antibiotics, believing they will shorten an illness, allowing their child to return to school or child care quicker. But antibiotics are not usually the answer. Antibiotics are powerful drugs that need to be used cautiously. Antibiotics have no effect on viruses and will not reduce the length of the illness or the symptoms. They are highly effective in treating bacterial infections such as strep throat or bacterial pneumonia. But overuse of antibiotics can make them less effective when truly needed. Some bacteria strains have become resistant to antibiotics as a result of antibiotic overuse. The best way to treat a viral infection is with rest, fluids, and TLC. So feel free to baby your child who has the cold or the flu. Give them lots of love and care, but save the antibiotics for when they are truly needed. And for more information on children's health, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Hi, I'm Dr. Regina Benjamin, U.S. Surgeon General. As a family doctor, I've seen the terrible impact of a premature birth. Losing a baby is one of the hardest things a family can go through. As Surgeon General, I see the toll that premature births have on our nation. It can cause lifelong disabilities. It is the leading cause of death in newborns. And our country has one of the highest rates of preterm birth in the world. We must do better. Hospitals need to ensure that babies are delivered early, only when medically necessary. We need research to find the causes of premature birth and research to find new ways to prevent it. Couples need to learn the risk of premature birth and what they can do to have a full-term baby, such as getting a preconception checkup. Remember, 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and every week of pregnancy counts. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Our guest of this segment is Clifton Leaf. His book is called Truth in Small Doses, Losing the War on Cancer. Here's Dr. Mike Roizen. Dr. Mike?
Clifton, Truth in Small Doses, extremely interesting and talks about cancer, but you don't talk about, for example, obesity or any of the things that regular people could do about this. And let me, meaning physical activity or obesity, at least I didn't catch it. And let me go back and correct something since we were talking about obesity rates. When I look at 1990, no state in the U.S. had more than 15% obesity. Now, no state has less than 20% obesity, and only one state has less than than 25%. Let me go through and ask you, how much of the war on cancer is due to, or the lack of winning the war on cancer is due to things like obesity, lack of physical activity, and our food choices?
You know, it's a great question, and thank you for having me on the show. It's great to be here. You know, I think that there are two elements here. The first is, you know, given that the medical science that we have, are we making the kind of progress that we could be making? And that has to do with, are we doing the things that we know helps prevent cancer and heart disease and other chronic killers? And the second part of it is, are we doing what we can to learn more and learn faster what we don't know? And so I spent a lot of the book on that second question about some of the barriers, academic barriers and really cultural barriers to being able to get more information, more research about what's causing many cancers and how to cure them. But getting to your question, which I think is a really important and meaty one, which is that, hey, we know a lot about how to prevent cancers, and we're not really doing much about it at all. And obesity is a big link in that. So, you know, obesity, of course, is related to some of the inflammatory processes that happen. And inflammation is one of the sort of crucial things that the body does well in wound healing, but it does badly, and when it goes terribly wrong, it can lead to cancer.
Now,
so I think that's an important issue.
Now, one of the things you talk about, or at least that you emphasize in the book, is, at least from what I took from it, and was the lack of cooperation among scientists and, if you will, the small progress in cancers. You contrast this with the large changes in heart disease. Now, the pharmaceutical companies and the scientists were essentially very similar. I mean, they have the same motivations, they're the same companies often, they're the same, universities that do the science. Why did they come out with such big progress against heart disease, as you point out, the 30% or more decrease in heart disease, the 60% more decrease in the incidence of stroke? Why did they do so much better? Is it just that the heart disease and stroke were much easier, or was there a difference in the mindset?
The mindset is very much, but I think it really actually helps to just even paint this for your listeners. You know, if you go back to 1970, and you know where we had 138,000 more deaths from heart disease in 1970 than we did in 2010, despite the fact that we have 100 million more people in the country, and we're older. And that we're heavier, as you pointed out. So that's a remarkable thing. Now, with cancer, you know, we have many, many more deaths from cancer, and that has partly risen because of the increase in population and the older population. But what we did with heart disease was we thought of it as a process. It wasn't an event. It was a process, and so. You know, the mindset with cancer is very much that it's somehow an event. Like, you go to the doctor, and the doctor tells you, I'm sorry, Mr. Smith, I'm sorry, Mrs. Smith, the scans came back, you have cancer. And at that moment is when the clock starts. It doesn't just start for insurance payments, and it starts for when the survival clock starts ticking, but it also starts in terms of our research and our efforts to deal with it, rather than going back to what we did with heart disease. Was we saw this is a long developmental process, and we have to do is intervene early with the symptoms, essentially, the biomarkers of a developing disease. In this case, high cholesterol, hypertension, those kinds of elements. And we really got people to address those early in the process of heart disease, and so people stopped dying of it. You know, fewer people that get the disease, the fewer that die of it.
But we don't have those same markers for cancer, or do we, do you think?
Well, you know, in some cases we don't. And part of what I address in the book is what our failure is in terms of organizing in a way that we'll find them. In some cases we do. So what we've seen, for example, is a dramatic reduction in death from cervical cancer in the U.S., based in large part on early markers of cervical dysplasia. You know, people go
so this is
pap smear, right?
Pap smears.
Yeah. It's incredible.
And now we have a vaccine, but we have a vaccine that is only 53%, I think, of young girls are getting it.
Yeah. Well, there's a great bang for the buck, Dr. Mike. I mean, you know, a vaccine is the most effective public health intervention there is. And we really have to encourage more young women to get that vaccine because it will save lives.
Now, is there a difference in the way the pharmaceutical companies are approaching cancer compared to how they approached heart disease as well?
Yeah, I think the pharmaceutical companies in many ways get their marching orders, so to speak, from the way the FDA looks and evaluates the drugs that come to them for approval. So in heart disease, there was this real acceptance that the disease was a process, a developmental process. And so they allowed the treatment of those markers like high cholesterol. So when you look at what we've done in terms of this sort of anti-heart disease medicines, it's, you know, it's cholesterol medicines, Lipitor and Crestor and the whole rest of them, and antihypertensives as well. That's really where we've made the great strides. And in cancer, there still is this feeling like, oh, well, you can't treat healthy people. So this idea that we can't preempt cancer is very much ingrained in the FDA mindset.
So the difference, if you will, let me go and elaborate on that for the listeners, if you will. The difference is we have what we call surrogate markers of the disease in heart disease and stroke. And those are, for example, LDL lousy cholesterol, or now triglycerides, or if you will, some other blood pressure. And in cancer, we look at what we require isn't just tumor size usually. It is actually does it prolong survival. So those are what we call outcome studies that are much tougher and much more expensive to do. It would be looking at a person who has a heart attack and saying, are they going to have fewer heart attacks over the next 10 years? Much tougher than what we call the intermediate variable studies to do.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. And so, you know, listen, I think there's part of the sense that, you know, there's this unwillingness to act without certainty. You know, we think that we're going to somehow have certainty about these surrogate markers. But back in the 1950s and 60s, we just didn't know that high cholesterol
we're going to have to come back and talk about this after the break. We're talking with Clifton Leaf, LEAF, the author of The Truth in Small Doses. And you want to go to his website, it's cliftonleaf.com. The Truth in Small Doses. We'll have more about cancer versus heart disease, or cancer and the problem of winning the war and how to win it when we return.
YouDocs@gmail.com, YouDocs@gmail.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only 1 in 5 girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now.
The words you say to her today.
Can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together, we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance. And that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to greatstartgtl.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at greatstartgtl.com. That's greatstartgtl.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to greatstartgtl.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Also on iHeartRadio Talk. Don't forget about that, iHeartRadio Talk. Clifton Leaf's book is called Truth in Small Doses, Losing the War on Cancer. And here once again is Dr. Mike Royson.
So let's finish this up, Clifton, and then we've got a series of quick questions from the email line. If you will, the major problem hasn't been the amount of effort compared, if you will, the pharmaceutical firms versus others, but maybe the FDA process in accepting surrogate markers and us not having good surrogate markers for the cancer chemotherapeutic agents.
Sure. I mean, it's not just the FDA. I think there's a whole broad academic mindset in cancer community that says, you know, we got to tackle this thing once it's sort of clear and obviously cancer rather than before. So, but the FDA is certainly a part of it. Yeah.
Now let me go in. I'm going to quickly toss it to Bridget, but I've got a series of questions on the email line. I'm going to summarize them. Does aluminum, does arsenic, do the pollutants cause cancer? And is the reason that we've done so poorly is we've had both increased pollutants and increased, if you will, decreased physical activity increased obesity, increased foods that stimulate cancer?
Sure. Well, cancer is really, in a lot of ways, a very natural process. You know, what happens is it's caused when even a few mutations within a single cell give that cell an advantage, a growth advantage over its neighbors. And so everything kind of gets out of whack at that point. But a lot of things can cause that genetic mutation. So part of that, it can be natural, like cell division, you know, just in the process of cell separating and their genome separating. But part of that can be caused by other things in our diet, in our environment, smoking, radiation. And so the level, the more we expose ourselves to these elements, the more likely for the unfortunate accident of cancer to happen. And that's really where we haven't done anything to prevent them. So yes, I can't speak specifically to aluminum, but arsenic, you know, is a known carcinogen. It's also, by the way, used in cancer treatment in some forms.
Bridget had a question. Go ahead.
Hi, Clifton. I was wondering, you talked a lot about how the U.S. spends so much on researching and treating the disease, and the problem actually that we're faced with right now stems from it's not that we don't have enough money to research and treat it, but it's rather that it's not being spent the right way. Can you expand upon that and explain your suggestions?
You know, yeah, I mean, this was probably the most provocative thing that I, found in my reporting over close to a decade, was everyone thinks, hey, it was just the money. If we only had more money, we'd be able to cure the war on cancer. We've been saying that we've been able to cure cancer. We've been saying that for decades. And in fact, we went from a budget of about $1.5 billion in 1972 to close to $31 billion today for the NIH. And yet researchers have about half the chance or less than half the chance of getting a research grant than they did 4 decades ago. And not only that, but we keep giving the money to the same people at the same tiny group of institutions over and over again. I mean, we talk about funding 3,000 institutions, but really only about 30 or 40 get any kind of money from the public taxpayers. So there's a lot of great ideas out there that just aren't being seen.
So how do you break that cycle?
Well, it's hard because the problem is that those investigators were starving for funds, and there are lots of them. They say if you increase the size of the pie, we'll get a little bit more. Maybe we'll get a few dribbles from somebody else's slice. And, you know, so they don't want you to change the system. They just want you to add more money. But we've been doing that for decades now, and there seems to be no amount of money that's enough. So my suggestion is to look at those things in the culture, in the academic culture, in the grantsmanship, in all of the ways we divvy up that money, and figure out how do we make this more effective. And in fact, we're not even opening up new investigative projects. We're just giving more money to existing projects. And so those projects are getting more expensive, but we're not getting more and more new ideas.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's tough. So you're focused.
I break it down in the book, and it's kind of frightening when you look at it, when you actually do the numbers and see who's getting what. It's just really disturbing.
So your focus on the book is how did we get here, and I read a little bit about your personal experience with Hodgkin's.
Yeah.
And is that what really motivated you, your initial interest in cancer?
You know, everyone asks that, and I should just start telling people yes, because it's so much more simple than the real answer. The real answer is, you know, I was I'm a financial journalist. I was at Fortune, and I was executive editor of of Fortune magazine, which is, you know, home of the Fortune 500, and I was convinced we were winning the war on cancer because I kept hearing about all this rhetoric, all this improvement we were making. Every week there was a new report of a, quote, breakthrough or an advance. And so I started to report that we were winning this war. But then as I started looking at the numbers, how many people were getting cancer, how many people were dying of it, what we were spending, it looked like there was this disconnect between the numbers and the rhetoric. And to me, that reminded me a lot of what the Wall Street scandals that I had been covering. Hey, wait a minute. Companies are saying one thing, but the numbers are showing something else. And so I really approached it like a business story. you know, trying to identify, you know, who was telling the truth, what was really happening. And so I think it helped that I had cancer and that I had overcome it and been through that experience. But really, I see it more as being started as a reporter.
Let me say thank you, Clifton. The Truth in Small Doses is the book, Why We're Losing the War on Cancer and How to Win It, a brilliant expose and a brilliant discussion in the book. And thank you for a wonderful session talking about it with us. The website, CliftonLeaf.com. That's right, isn't it?
Thanks. It is. Thank you so much, Dr. Mike. What a pleasure to be here with you and Bridget and your guests. I look forward to it again.
Thank you. We're now going to go to a Real Age Tip of the Week. And the tip this week is on, if you will, we're going to talk about, is your spouse driving you crazy? Marriage, of course, is like the internet. When it works, it's brilliant. And we, Dr. Oz and I, can't imagine life or living without either. But when there's a glitch in a happy marriage, which is almost inevitable, it makes you feel crazy because you know how good it can be. So for those moments when your marriage resembles Angry Birds, here's a remember why it's great for you list. One, because you'll live longer. Marriage extends guys' warranties for a longer life by as much as 30%. Because you won't gain a lot of post-divorce weight, because you'll enjoy life more, and because you can get some of your best exercise in bed. And that's the Real Age Tip of the Week.
Radio MD. Stay well.
Is your skin aging before your eyes? There is something you can do to reverse those signs of aging. I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry, and my solution doesn't involve a knife or a needle. It's a serum I created called Nighttime. Nighttime makes your skin smoother, brighter, and thicker with just one step each day. I've packed Nighttime with vitamin C and A, moisturizers, fruit acids, skin brighteners, and antioxidants. That's a lot of science in one bottle. But that's what it takes to make your skin look younger and more attractive. Until Labor Day, when you purchase two bottles of Nighttime, you'll get a third bottle free with free shipping. Call 855-940-1800. That's 855-940-1800, or on the web, it's drperrys.com. That's drperrys.com. Put the word Radio MD in the discount box to receive three bottles of Nighttime for the price of two.
You may already take omega-3s for heart and brain health, but what most people don't realize is that DHA is really the preferred form. Did you know if you take omega-3s, but your body cannot convert them into the preferred DHA form, you won't get much benefit? The ultimate DHA omega-3 would be water-soluble, so it's already in the right form for digestion. That's a game-changer. It would eliminate the fish burps, be good-tasting, and all-natural. It would be environmentally sustainable from algae oil, plus non-GMO and allergen-free. Well, I have some good news for you. Empirical Labs already invented this. And better yet, you can get a bottle right now for 50% off with a special offer at TakeOmega.com. This is the only water-soluble DHA supplement, plus it's vegan. So go to TakeOmega.com right now for a limited time savings, 50% off at TakeOmega.com. That's O-M-E-G-A. TakeOmega.com.